This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
There it goes to left. Altuve has tied it. That is a base hit into center. Correa coming to the plate. Astros take the lead here in game four. Jason Castro delivers.
Not enough of the strike zone. Eovaldi yelling out after not getting that call. And then Jason Castro trying to be the hero for Houston in game four.
With a 1-2 count, pitch number 22.
He does. Astros win at a final of 9-2, and they've evened this best of seven series, two games apiece.
Hell yeah, they have. You should have snapped our necks when you had the chance, Boston. And now the bats are alive. Now there's a little momentum going on. And the Astros, if you did not stay up last night, I could see where you would be mucking and grinding your way through that game going, I cannot believe I'm staying up for what was looking like another heartbreak. Just the Astros could not get anything done offensively all night long. Jose Altuve has been struggling the whole series. And then, like Altuve, rises from the dead in the biggest way possible, ties it in the eighth with a solo home run that you heard right there. And then Jason Castro with the big hit that wound up getting buried under seven two-out runs by the Astros in the top of the ninth, against a lot of them against Nathan Eovaldi, who they're going to be talking in Boston today about the decision by Alex Cora to bring in his ace starter to pitch relief in a tie game in the ninth inning. And the Astros win 9-2 as we welcome you in. Game five today, 4 o'clock. We'll be out at Kirby Ice House. Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. Woo, Seth, that was there were some moments last night, man.
There were some huge moments. I will say one thing about this Astros team through these playoffs, that despite whatever the hell was going on in games two and three, I get so excited when there are two outs and the Astros are at the plate. They've got 36 two-out runs in the playoffs so far this postseason.
Wow.
That's the most through it by a team through eight games in a postseason ever, which feels like, that sounds like kind of an arbitrary number, like three. It tells you, they've been scoring a lot of runs when there are two outs. These guys are as clutch as clutch could be. In Jason Castro, who I still will 100% say shouldn't have started this game, but came in as a pinch hitter, in which he's been really good as a pinch hitter this year. And he came through exactly when you needed him. There's no way in hell, Sean, at any time during Jason Castro's previous tenure with the Astros, there's no way in hell you would have ever gotten excited or eagerly anticipated a Jason Castro at bat in the ninth inning with two outs.
No.
And yet, here we are, where he's developed himself into a guy that can sit cold for seven innings, watch the game, then come in and show up huge.
Yeah, well, and he pinch hit for Maldonado late in the game. The hit that he got that we heard there that put the Astros ahead for good at 3-2 was actually his second at-bat in the game.
Yeah.
He came in for Maldonado earlier in the game in the sixth or seventh inning, and he smoked a ball to first base that probably, if it goes 3 feet one way or the other, he doesn't line it right to the first baseman, it's probably a double down the line, and the Astros tie up the ball game at that point. But yeah, Jason Castro with a huge hit, which there is so much to unpack from that hit. There's so much to unpack from this game. A game, Seth, where once again, the Astros starting pitcher, we'll call him the opener because they weren't expecting to get five or six innings out of Greinke, but I think they were expecting to get two, and they didn't. They got four outs from Zach Greinke. We'll get to the bullpen. We'll get to Greinke. We'll get to what all this means for today with Game 5. But the Castro hit is the big thing. Here was Dusty Baker following the game on Jason Castro coming up big with two outs.
That was a huge hit. You know, there's two strikes. You know, and then we start first ball hitting. But that was a huge, you know, base hit by, you know, by Castro to give us the lead. But, you know, with this team that you're playing, you know, we wanted to pad the lead, and pad the lead we did, you know what I mean? And because that one run, you know, might not have stood up, especially in this ballpark.
And Dusty's already said that Maldonado is going to start today. So anybody thinking like, well, they, you know, they're switching catchers now, Castro can hit. Dusty still wants Maldonado in there. He's sort of his manager on the field. Seth, that's a great stat you brought up, that 36 runs with two outs they've scored so far. I didn't know what the exact number was. You can feel it, though. And I think I know you know, you kind of alluded to maybe it's an arbitrary number. I don't think it is, because I think it's, to me, that's symbolic of what this team has been for 5 years now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is, I said it, I've been saying it since 2017. This is the most clutch team that I've ever rooted for in any sport. This is the team that I have felt the most confident in any sport that I've rooted for, coming up in big situations, not being fazed by failure, being able to flush a game and move on. And I think it feels like, and we'll see what Fromber does today, but it feels like they've kind of weathered this Boston storm. That's what last night was about to me. It was about Castro coming up big and the bullpen once again coming up big. And this was not a game where the Astros were getting snowed up. They didn't need to go win this game 9-8, which I thought they would need to do, especially early in the game when the Red Sox are hitting bombs again early in the game.
Yeah, and I guess that's where I am with Maldonado starting tonight instead of Castro. It's that the argument for putting Castro in that I kept hearing all day yesterday is people said I was an idiot for not wanting to start Castro. Sean, it was near unanimous. Like, every poll I saw, anytime people asked the question on Twitter, people thought that Castro should have started.
It was 60-40 in the Pender poll that I put up, by the way.
Is that all it was? 60-40, oh, okay, that's, yeah, another. Because, look, at the end of the day, the argument for starting Castro was the Red Sox are going to score 15 runs every single time they face the Astros. Yeah. Well, they scored two runs last night. Mm-hmm. Like, at some point, you just have to accept that the starting pitching has been trash so far. And, like, ERA of starting pitching now that Greinke got knocked around a little bit.
I don't know. I'll have to go. I'll do the night.
He only 20 or so.
Yeah, it was 20.25 going into last night.
He only let up what?
He let up two runs in an inning and a third. So he actually brought the ERA down with two runs in an inning.
No, that would calculate out to like, oh, okay, it would be less than 20. Yeah. Good job. Yeah. 20 ERA on the evening.
Right.
But I do think that Castro, obviously, in that situation was perfectly used, and that's what he's good at. Like Castro has worked at being a pinch hitter this year, which means he's studying the relievers probably more than other guys are. Mm-hmm. When he goes in there and fatigue from catching, I don't think that all of a sudden Castro has turned into some kind of offensive exceptional maven as a catcher slash hitter. I think you need to keep using him in exactly the role you've been using him in.
Yeah. I would say, you know, the bullpen is the big story. I would say within the story of the bullpen, Seth, you can't say enough about Christian Javier, man. You cannot say Christian Javier. Yeah. Given the fact that the starters in this series have been so bad, I would submit to you that Christian Javier's two appearances, I don't know if he may have appeared more than two times in this series, but the two appearances in the wins, the two innings that he gave you in game one that kind of steadied the flow of the Red Sox. The Red Sox are starting to get stuff going offensively. In came Javier and gave you two innings to settle things down in game one. And then the three innings, I just can't say enough about the three innings that he gave them last night. I mean, Dusty put him out there for a fourth inning, and he just ran out of gas. He was up in the low 50s as far as number of pitches go. I don't know who, like, four games in, you could argue Christian Javier's the MVP of this series for the Astros, because nobody's hitting really well, and none of the starting pitchers are pitching very well. The bullpen has really been the big story. I think four games in, Christian Javier's the MVP of this series for the Houston Astros. I don't think that's a reach. You're thinking about
it. Yeah, if you had to declare it after four games. I'm trying to figure out the wisdom of doing that.
I'm not here to debate it. I'm just saying, like,
I guess, fine. I'll give him the that's great. Yeah, he's the MVP of the first four games of the series.
Yeah.
I guess the biggest question would be, all right, what does this mean? in terms of pitching and who could be the actual MVP of this series, it's going to end up being an offensive player, I would guess, if the Astros pull this out. Tonight, Framber just flat out has to – he's got – well, okay, I take it back. Because last night I said, okay, Greinke's got to give you something. Greinke's got to give you three or four innings somehow, some way. He didn't do it, but Javier did. Javier, Graveman, Presley all were on 3 days rest last night. Yeah. They didn't have to use Ryan Stanek. Presley didn't pitch much. Graveman only pitched, what, like 11 innings or so? Or 11 pitches or so?
He pitched two innings.
No, Maton. Maton, yeah, Graveman pitched two innings. Maton only had 11 pitches. So they're still relatively fresh with some of their key guys, as long as Framber gives you an honest outing tonight.
We said it every game. Like, I feel like, okay, we say this, then Framber's going to go 2 1/3, and then we're going to be like, okay, now we're out over our skis again with the bullpen. All right, we're going to talk plenty of Astros today. We'll circle back to the Astros at the bottom of the hour. Big story with the Texans this week is Whitney Mercilus is now gone. Now both Whitney and head coach David Culley have kind of explained things behind the release of Whitney Mercilus. We'll hear from both of them next.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
There was big news with the release of Whitney Mercilus. Can you walk us through that decision and how you plan to compensate for his absence?
Well, what ended up happening is that we've got a lot of depth at that position. Mm. And, you know, Whitney's been around a long time. He's been a big part of what the Houston Texans is all about. And, you know, at this point, where we're going, we felt like for the best of our football team and for best for Whitney was to be able to move on and give him a chance to be able to hook up with someone at this point and us to move on and get better at what we're trying to do.
All right, so that's David Culley sitting down with our friend Vanessa Richardson from Channel 2. That she was doing the interview for their game day stuff this week on Channel 2, on KPRC 2, explaining the Whitney Mercilus decision. Whitney Mercilus had a charity function yesterday that he was at the same day that he's getting released by the team. He was out at a local school that his foundation was making a charitable donation to. And Whitney himself also met with the media. One thing he said that I found interesting, Seth, and we'll hear it right here, is kind of how Whitney categorized this, his departure from the team.
It's just, you know, as they said, it was a mutual thing where it was just part of ways. And so I'm just looking forward to what's next.
I don't know why it's bothering me so much that it's being positioned as a mutual parting of the ways. You know what I mean? Like, it, for some reason that bugs me, because J.J. Watt was a mutual parting of the ways. You know what I mean? Like, that this whole thing is being positioned as Whitney being on the level of a player. We're like, well, we want to do you a solid, you know, and we'll take our $15 million cap hickey on the way out the door while we do you a solid. I don't know. And it may be the case. Maybe it was mutual. But I don't know why it bothers me so much. I'm like, no, he was not good at football the last 2 years.
He wasn't. Well, that's the thing about Whitney. It's not that he was. It's not that he was bad at football. It was he was underpaid, or he's overpaid at football. I think there's a place for Whitney Mercilus as kind of almost like a utility infielder type in baseball, where a guy that can come in and do a lot of stuff for you and do it capably, but he's just not an impact player like he used to be. So. That's been the issue. That contract, as soon as they paid him, was going to make Whitney Mercilus kind of a guy with a target on his back. You would think, or you would presume, that was what was so curious about the Texans seemingly going all in on saying, hey, Whitney Mercilus is one of our guys. He's one of the bedrocks. It just didn't. It didn't make a whole lot of sense. He'd usually, typically, be the one of the first guys that a new GM would come in and a new head coach would come in and say, "All right, well, look, we gotta start trimming some of the fat off of here." I'm guessing it went more like this, Sean, which was maybe the Texans. I could totally see it being the Texans saying, "All right, Whitney, we're thinking, would you like a chance to go elsewhere?" And Whitney saying, "Yeah, I'd love a chance to go elsewhere."
Yes, that's
or just anywhere. Yes. Just maybe not even go elsewhere. Just not be playing under whatever the hell this is right now.
Yes, and I don't want to get too caught up in semantics. And this is, trust me, this is a me thing more than it is something that's probably something that's bugging everybody else. But when I hear mutual parting of the ways for a player who has not been a good football player has been overpaid, to use your phrase, the last couple of years. To me, mutual parting of the ways means Whitney walked into their office and said, "Hey, look, guys, we need to find a solution here. I don't want to be here anymore." I think there's zero chance that Whitney went in and rocked the boat. You know what
they
I mean?
It's not like they'd been in counseling for 3 months and decided after 3 months of counseling, they decided that this relationship was insalvageable.
Yes.
Right? It wasn't, to put it into, let's say, put it in terms of when you're a young adult or a teenager and you've got a relationship, and maybe you're kind of hoping that your girlfriend's going to dump you, and maybe you start living like you're already single, and you're out, and you're hooking up with girls at parties and stuff, because you just want your girlfriend to dump you. You just don't have the guts to do it yourself. But then all of a sudden you find out your girlfriend was cheating on you the whole time. And, oh, my stomach. Yeah. Oh, it hurts. Yeah. Oh, how could you betray me like this? Oh, no.
Yeah.
It wasn't that. Like,
no.
It was more like you found your girlfriend was cheating on you as well. And you're like, oh, okay.
Right.
This is just like that Pina Colada song, except we go our separate ways.
The Pina Colada song.
That's what this was, Sean. Yeah. It was the Pina Colada song.
The dumbest song ever.
Whitney and the Texans went their separate way.
Yeah, they did. Like, my guess is if Whitney had said, if he went into their office and they said, "Look, Whitney, we're thinking of moving on," and he said, "No, I want to stay," they would have been like, "No, we're moving on." Like, that's how it would have gone, is my guess.
Yeah, that's the whole thing about it. Like, that's the problem is I'm guessing the original version of the Pina Colada song was like, "Oh, okay, you're out looking for somebody else. I'm out looking for somebody else. And somehow we've been together all this time, and the gods kept us from knowing that we both enjoyed pina coladas.
And getting caught in the rain.
Getting caught in the rain, yeah. That was it. No, we should go our separate ways. Let's have one. We'll have one more dalliance for the road, and then we'll be off on our separate ways.
God.
That's what – this was the appropriate – Whitney Merciless and the Texans rewrote the end of the pina colada song.
They did, and they go their separate ways. What does Whitney want to do now? Where is Whitney off to now? Here's what he had to say about that.
As far as it goes, being with a team that has a chance to make it to the playoffs, to make it to the Super Bowl, to be with a contender, honestly. So that's the direction that I want to go. Get a chance to, as I'm on the back half of my career, put the cherry on top, honestly.
All right. So I guess the answer to this question, Seth, has everything to do with what you were talking about before, about the level of pay. But so when I ask you, does Whitney have anything left that is appealing for a Super Bowl contender? I would imagine for the minimum salary. Sure, he does, I guess.
Yeah.
Right.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, his contract's guaranteed with the Texans, so any other team that picks him up can just pick him up for minimum while the Texans are paying the rest of his salary this year. And that could help the Texans out a little bit with offsets and everything. But I was on in Kansas City yesterday, and they asked me if Whitney Merciless would be a good addition. And I said, yeah, he's probably better than your eighth best defensive lineman. And if you guys rotate your defensive lineman through, and Frank Clark's been kind of a disappointment, he can do some stuff for you. And then there's also that part of it where there's sometimes just that boost of being in a new environment, being in a new scheme, all of that stuff. And it's not like Whitney had been lazy or hadn't been playing hard or anything. It's just that sometimes that little bit of extra having to prove yourself in a new setting can provide one last spark, for the final season on a good team. So
yeah.
I think there's a very good – Whitney's either going to play for a playoff contender or nobody at all. That's what I would guess.
Yeah, because he's not making any additional money. The money is all offset with the Texans. So it's all about just wanting to go play and go chase a ring somewhere for Whitney Merciless. All right, back to the Astros. They win 9-2 last night. 7 runs in the top of the ninth inning, all with 2 outs. And this is an inning that not only wins the game for the Astros, but I think there's ripple effects that they carry into today with this game. Let's relive it. Let's relive the most important inning of the postseason so far for the Houston Astros. If you didn't stay up late last night and you missed it, we will take you through every important piece of last night's top of the ninth inning against the Boston Red Sox next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
There it goes to left. Altuve has tied it.
All right, that was the eighth inning, and that was great to see, man. Altuve's had a rough series, but Seth, he just has a knack, even when things are going poorly for Jose Altuve. Like game one, for example, in this series. I mean, he had struck out with the bases loaded early in that game, and then the very next half inning, he botches a ground ball that would have gotten him out of an inning in game one, and then he comes back later in that game, ties it up late in the game with a home run, and same thing in this game, ties it up late with the solo home run. We'll get into the ninth inning in just a second, but that was nice to see. Hopefully, between that and the walk that Altuve got when they batted around in the ninth inning, it was good to see the old Altuve back for a couple of at-bats.
Well, and those were both, by the way, to talk about the symmetry of all of that, games one and four, Javier entered with the Astros trailing by a slim margin, 3-1 in game one, 2-1 in game four. In both of those games, he held it down until Jose Altuve hit a game-tying home run.
Yeah.
So it's been a Javier Altuve combo, a 1-2 punch of pulling you out of a hazardous situation in both victories in this series.
I would submit Correa as part of that as well. We remember in game one, it was the next inning where Correa hit the solo home run to give them the lead. And then last night, and this gets us started on the ninth inning, then last night it was Correa leading off the top of the ninth, and he had the big hit there. So let's relive the ninth inning. There's probably a lot of you getting up and you're getting in your car, and you know the score, 9-2, the Astros win last night. But you may not know exactly how it got done. You heard the Altuve home run there. If you went to bed, it was probably 2-1 when you went to bed. Altuve hits the home run too. And if you didn't go to bed and you stayed up for all of it, that's awesome too. I'm sure I'm going to get texts here like, who would go to bed in the middle of a playoff game? Some people do. You got to get up early. So Altuve hits the home run to tie it in the eighth. In the ninth inning, Alex Cora makes the decision to bring his number one starting pitcher, Nathan Uvalde, into the game, which is easy to look back now and say, bad decision, Alex Cora. Seth, just in general, before we get into these highlights, what do you think about the decision to do that and the potential ripple effect this is going to have on this series? I mean, Uvalde didn't come in and throw three pitches. He came in and pitched a laborious two-thirds of an inning for this team.
Right, and you've got Chris Sale coming up for I don't know if that it basically does a push Uvalde out to game seven?
They're saying, the announcers, I don't know, and I don't know what Cora had to say about it. Admittedly, I didn't see Cora's press conference. The guys in the studio show, Poppy and A-Rod and the Big Hurt, they all seem to think that Uvalde's going to be fine. Like, if they want to pitch him in game six, he'll be okay. But for what it's worth, he threw 24 pitches last night.
So 24 pitches, and then you're taking a pitcher out of his comfort zone, obviously. Anytime you use a starter, either as a reliever or on short rest or what have you. I like it, Sean. I don't think that Eovaldi is just such a stud that it doesn't matter, and he can mow down Astros in his wake. I very much feel like Astros fans were understandably panicking based on a couple of games where the Red Sox completely shelled a couple of your starting pitchers. Mm-hmm. But you got to remember that this Astros offense is the most productive offense in baseball, that the pitching has generally been outstanding, and the relievers in this series have basically kept you afloat.
Yeah.
So, I think that I was excited when I saw Uvalde. I at the very least, I still wasn't confident that the Astros were going to win, but it was a part of it. There was this one thing where it almost, like, it perked me up. I feel like Uvalde coming in probably made Red Sox fans more nervous than it made me nervous as an Astros fan, which is counterintuitive in a way.
No, but it felt like they flinched, right? It felt like the Red Sox flinched, you know?
So, like, why are you guys not more confident than this?
Yeah.
Like, wait a second. You guys have had this series under control.
Yeah.
And then because it's a close game, Yeah. Going into the ninth, all of a sudden your sphincters are going to tighten up.
Not even.
I don't know about you, Alex Cora.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, not. It's not even a save situation either. The game was tied at the time. All right, so let's relive the ninth inning here. So if you're just getting up, the Astros scored seven runs, all with two outs in the top of the ninth, and it got started with Carlos Correa.
Fly ball into right, pretty well hit, carrying it the wall. Second, it's a leadoff double for Houston.
All right, so Correa caught a lot of heat on this from the announcers on this game, Seth, on that play. I mean, you didn't hear it there, but if you saw it, you know what I'm talking about. Correa was kind of admiring his handiwork coming out of the batter's box. He was not running at maximum speed.
Yeah, it could have been a triple.
Because Hunter Renfroe kind of misplayed it a little bit. He let the ball go over his head. It hit the wall, rolled away from him. If Correa were going full bore out of the box, the announce team seemed to think that it definitely would have been a triple. I didn't watch it. I don't think he was loafing as badly as they made it out that he was loafing, but it was a big topic that Correa was only on second base with nobody out.
I would say in a morning where I don't feel like harping on that, I mean, that's kind of been a theme with Correa. It's one thing. I don't expect guys in the modern major leagues to run it out no matter what to first every time. There are times where Correa almost trusts the opponent's fielding a little too much, and there's times where just on throws to first where a shortstop bobbles the ball a little bit and Correa could have had a hit if he had just at the very least run through the actual fielding part. So it ultimately didn't hurt or matter, and this one just didn't bother me as much. Because, I would have assumed it was going to be a double, too.
All right, so Correa's on second. Kyle Tucker comes up, strikes out on three pitches, meekly, like swung at a ball in the dirt on strike three.
He had some ugly at-bats last night. That one, when he struck out earlier in the game, it looked like he was in a duck and cover drill.
Yeah, he's looking like he was trying to defend himself, and the bat happens to go through the strike zone.
It's like he was like being attacked by wasps. Yeah. He's trying to hit the wasps with his bat.
So Tucker strikes out, so you have one out, Carlos on second. Chaz McCormick coming up, and then Dusty Baker pinch hits Aledmys Diaz for Chaz McCormick. That was a decision I was not in favor of at the time. I feel like Chaz has come up in big situations before throughout the season. He was 4-for-10 in this series. He had a hit and a walk last night. Aledmys Diaz is coming in ice cold off the bench. Diaz strikes out. So now Uvalde has two strikeouts. He's got two outs. Carlos Correa on second. He had walked Yuli Gurriel to get to Chaz McCormick. So you have first and second. Now two outs because he had struck out Tucker and Diaz. You got the nine hole coming up. At this point, it's Castro, who had pinch hit for Maldonado earlier in the game. Uvalde gets to 1-2 and throws a breaking ball that should have been strike three. Even as an Astros fan, I'll admit, should have been strike three. Laz Diaz, who had a rough night last night, he's the home plate umpire, calls it a ball. Castro fouls off a pitch, and then the next pitch, this happens.
That is a base hit into center. Correa coming to the plate. Astros take the lead here in game four. Jason Castro delivers.
Not enough of the strike zone. Evaldi yelling out after not getting that call. And then Jason Castro trying to be the hero for Houston in game four.
All right, so let's start. There's two things I want to unpack there, Seth. The first is the pitch that Laz Diaz called a ball. What did you think of that?
Sometimes life is hard. It's not like we can recount the multiple times this has happened to the Astros.
First inning to the Astros. Greinke got screwed on what would have been a strike three that got them off the field in the first inning.
Altuve got called. Oh, go ahead.
No, well, Devers walks, and then the very next pitch, they hit a home run and go up 2-1 in the game. Bogarts hits the home run.
Altuve thrown out at first when the first baseman didn't even have his foot on the bag.
This happens.
It's life is hard. Yeah. You know what? You didn't have to let up the ensuing however many runs.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, didn't have to be a bloodbath.
They make it sound like all seven runs were Laz Diaz's fault. Like, no, the Astros and the Red Sox had something to do.
The Laz Diaz had a particularly horrendous night last night. I think it was one of the worst, at least by some of these accounts that follow the umpire grades and whatnot, said this is the worst performing umpire's appearance of the postseason so far.
Well, and he's been bad all year. That was brought up, and I think just to quantify it, The whatever stat service does sort of the graphics that shows the, you know, kind of the strike chart, you know, strikes and balls of where the various pitches were for the Red Sox. Laz Diaz missed 21 ball and strike calls in the game last night for the Red Sox, or overall for both teams. The average umpire misses between 8 and 9. So he was way off. So that's number one. Number two, and I really kind of realized this just in rewatching the ninth inning this morning, Seth. Jason Castro saved a lot of people with that base hit. He saved Carlos Correa because there were two outs. He saved Carlos Correa from what I'm sure would have been some hot takes about the speed with which he was running on the double that he hit, that maybe he should have been on third. He saved Kyle Tucker because Kyle Tucker looked like trash in his at-bat where he struck out on three pitches. And I think he saved Dusty Baker from the decision right before that to pinch hit Aledmys Diaz. I didn't like the decision in the moment. I tweeted it as much at the time. And Aledmys Diaz wound up striking out. So Castro, I mean, it wasn't just that he gave them a 3-2 lead. There's a lot of people probably breathing a sigh of relief that Castro was able to get that hit. And then, of course, it opened the floodgates after that. So,
yeah. So Castro's had more at-bats now, I believe, as a pinch hitter in this season than he had in his entire career.
That sounds right.
Leading up to 2021. He was pretty even a little while back. I'm guessing he's surpassed that.
Yeah.
I like him exactly how this is. I know a lot of people wanted him to start tonight or this afternoon, I guess. But I think he's perfect in that role. And I think that, like, in a game where it was very, very tight and it was a defensive battle right up until the end, Maldonado was valuable in that capacity. Like, you can't – it's easier to see what Castro does than it is to see what Maldonado contributes. But I can't sit here and lament the nine spot hitter as the reason for the best offense in baseball not producing over in games 2 and 3.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And there was a reminder even in the bottom of the ninth when Presley came in and put a couple guys on base. What happened with Castro back there, Seth? Passed ball, put the guys second and third. So
I know that's what everybody kept pushing back on me yesterday, saying, like, well, the Red Sox don't steal, so what's it matter? I was like, is that all a catcher does? Have you guys not watched, especially with Framber?
Yeah.
You know, they're like, do you really want Castro back there for Framber?
No.
Nobody knows where the hell those balls are going.
No, there's no
chance in hell that I want Castro back there for Framber.
Seth, it's a little like the Lonnie Johnson take where you go, they call it safety for a reason. Like, they call it catcher.
Yeah.
They call it catcher for a reason. You're supposed to catch it when it comes to you. It's not supposed to slip by. Here's the other thing I liked about the ninth inning last night. We're reliving the ninth inning of last night's ALCS Game 4. Astros score 7 runs, all with 2 outs in the top of the ninth. Not just the fact that they got to Uvalde, not just the fact that Alex Cora is now going to have probably some more decisions to make here over the final couple games of the series, 2 or 3 games, however many it winds up being. Not just that Jason Castro got the big hit, they went on to tack on all these runs, and I feel like they reestablished a couple things. They reestablished individually some guys, I think, maybe got a little bit of mojo and some momentum back, and I think they did it in a way that was very Astro-like. There were no home runs in this 7-run outburst. It was just chip away, chip away, chip away, chip away, and this was the big one here was Michael Brantley with the bases loaded.
And now with the bases loaded after a walk to Altuve, here's Brantley, and on the mound is Martin Perez. That's a line drive into right center field. Is going to get down and go to the wall and clear the bases. 3 more runs are going to score for the Astros as Brantley knocks it into the gap.
So Brantley clears the bases, and then Seth, from there, you're done. Kind of line drive, opposite field, base hit, RBI. Correa, kind of a swinging bunt almost that forces the Red Sox to make a play. There's a throwing error. Because the Astros put the ball in play, there's a throwing error. Now it's 8-2. Up comes Tucker. He gets a base hit. He atones for his sin. Now it's 9-2. It was a classic 2021 Astros kind of big inning.
It was really satisfying, too, because, Sean, sometimes, you know, if you just put a team out with a bunch of home runs, it's almost like a movie when the villain dies a little too quickly. You know, when you're just waiting and you're like, oh boy, I can't wait until this guy gets his comeuppance and he dies in an agonizingly slow death. But then all of a sudden, like instead the hero just lops the guy's head off. And sometimes the villain doesn't even know it's coming.
Yeah.
Like, no. I wanted Red Sox fans to embarrass themselves by heading for the exits Well, the game wasn't even nearly over yet. I wanted them to show. Well, the hero was bleeding. Well, their hero was bleeding on the field. Yeah. They just abandoned him. Yes. That's what they did. Yep. They showed their true colors, did they not? Yes.
I didn't want a quick Joffrey-like death where he just choked on something and was dead in like 5 seconds. I wanted a Ramsay Bolton-type death where he got mauled by his own hounds for about an hour.
That's a really good point.
That was a hound mauling.
When King Joffrey in Game of Thrones died, for all we know, like, he might not have even realized he was dying. It all happened so fast. He might have thought he was having an allergic reaction to shellfish or something.
Right.
Like,
right.
No. Yeah, we want you to know exactly what's going
on. Yes, yes. We want you mauled by your own dogs, and that's what happened to the Red Sox last night. You go to the bottom of the ninth, even in a 7-run game, you bring in Presley because he was stretched. He was stretched out and ready to go in a 3-2 game. You bring him in. Presley puts a couple guys on but gets out of trouble.
For the 1-2 count, pitch number 22. He does. Astros win at a final of 9-2, and they've evened this best of seven series, 2 games apiece.
I'm telling you, if I smoked cigarettes, I would have lit one up right there, Seth. That ninth inning was like sex. It was great. That was beautiful. That was Ryan Presley closing things out.
Did you not smoke a cigar?
I did not. I didn't. It was 11:30 at night. You know what I mean? Like, if I
how come that's not a thing? How come people don't smoke cigars after? I'm not a smoker. I don't know the difference.
Tony Soprano did.
Do you after? Okay,
he would.
Why
yeah.
is it? Why is the typical thing a cigarette and not a cigar?
I don't know. I feel like it's just kind of cliched. I think it's just, you know, it's been handed down through the years that way.
Could be kind of creepy for the woman, because usually I think everybody associates either cigar or pipe smoke as like some relative of theirs or something. Right. Like, you know, like when I smell pipe smoke, I think of my Uncle Bill. I don't want him to be thinking of my Uncle Bill.
Yeah, Pavlovian. Yeah, it's not good. Yeah. Not good at all.
Oh, baby, that was great. You know what that reminds me of?
Uncle Bill.
Uncle Bill. Thanksgiving's with Uncle Bill.
That's right. Seth alluded to it a little bit earlier. Jason Castro with the big hit. So a lot of folks going into the game last night wanted Castro to be the starting catcher for this team. Dusty was asked about this last night after the game. I don't think this is a big surprise. Castro starting for this team, game 5 today, not going to happen.
Maldi's doing a great job in game calling and throwing, and then that's a great combination. And then I can hit for Maldi later, with Castro. And so, it's been a great combination. You know, whenever he pinch hits for Maldi, Maldi's the guy that's the loudest and, cheering for him to come through.
You know what's funny, Seth, is with the way the roster is constructed in this ALDS, if you're just getting up, Payne and Pendergast with you, the Astros win 9-2 last night, 7 runs in the ninth inning. We're reliving that right now. If you recall, in the ALDS, they had 3 catchers on the roster. This time around, they only have 2 catchers on the roster. And the thought was, well, if you have a third catcher, you don't really have to use Castro as a catcher. You just use him as a pinch hitter. You could submit that if they had the 3 catchers on the roster and they just used Castro as a pinch hitter in that game last night, that he doesn't come back around for that second go round where he gets the big base hit. You know what I mean? That was his second at bat in the game. His first at bat, he came up and lined out to first base. Sometimes the best laid plans, they go, okay, well, we're going to roll with these 2 catchers. It's kind of risky. You'd like to have a third catcher so you can use Castro just specifically in the role that you want to use him in. The fact that he remained in the game as the catcher after that is what put him in the position to get the eventual game-winning base hit. So that was nice. That was really nice for the Astros last night. All right.
Somebody asked if you noticed that Joe Buck is a lot better when the Astros are winning.
Yeah, that.
Oh, like it doesn't bother you as much when he's winning, or
yeah,
is it,
I got that from one of the DJs here on our FM, Sarah Pepper. She was saying this morning, she's like, Joe Buck just hates the Astros. I said, not you, Sarah. Not you also. Like, he doesn't hate the Astros.
He's not. Look, it's funny. I get annoyed because every time I talk about how I get annoyed by Joe Buck, people assume that I'm saying because I think he's showing favorites or something. Like, that has nothing to do with it. My flaw with Joe Buck is that he sounds incredibly bored about the games that he's covering.
Right.
And he can't be bothered to even get excited about a home run by either team unless it's one that he definitely knows. Like, he's like the guy, he's like somebody that you bring to a ballpark for the first time and you're like, just watch the outfielders. They'll tell you where the ball is going.
Yep.
He sits there and he waits – He waits until the ball has actually left the stadium before he announces that it's a home run. It's it annoys the hell out of me. The other thing, you know what happened with that broadcast, though, the last couple nights, Sean?
What's that?
They're doing these promos at the beginning and during commercial breaks, which are all Red Sox, right? And I don't know if maybe if FS1 had done the home one, because they weren't on FS1 for the first two Minute Maid, were
yeah,
they?
I don't know if they've been on Fox and FS1. I mean,
they're Fox,
yeah,
but not FS1. So it's the same producers. But they're doing these promos that are very heavily, they're very annoying laundry cart promos.
Yeah.
Because when the Red Sox hit a home run, they take a little ride in the laundry cart. Right. They're doing these really, really cheesy, corny promos involving laundry carts. And it kind of sets the tone for being annoyed by the broadcast.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I just don't
But
think...
yeah, don't know. Joe Buck is awful, but it has nothing to do with whether he's showing favorites.
Yeah,
He's a horrible person to recite things to you while you're watching a baseball game.
He's equally indifferent to both teams. Trust us. All right.
Yeah.
713-572-4610. Now we're getting a lot of takes on why cigarettes over cigars after sex. Thanks for that,
it's
Seth. Appreciate it.
Than chewing tobacco.
Yeah, yes.
Cigars take over an hour to smoke while cigarettes are quick. That makes a lot of sense.
That
you
does.
Get to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. All right, we roll
this
on.
This is my routine, typically. It goes like this, Sean. I'd be like, sure, yeah, we can do that again. Just let me smoke this cigarette. Snuff out the cigarette, turn away, go to sleep. There you go.
Taking notes, kids? All right. 713-572-4610. Seth Payne with some advice for the kids out there. All right, John McClain joins us in about an hour. We'll get his thoughts on the Astros last night, get his thoughts on the Texans and everything going on with them, the Cardinals and the Texans. This Sunday afternoon, it's an afternoon game starting in the 3 o'clock hour here on Sports Radio 610. Back to the Astros. The ALCS MVP has 8 heads right now. That's next.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.